big fella. You drunk, big fella. Two sips and now you on a trip, big fella. You not a drinker. I can see it all in your leg, big fella. You wobbly, big fella. You finna fall. Sit down, you drunk, big fella.
All night I've been drinking, all night I've been drinking, all night I've been drinking. Hey.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 63 of The Locker Room, brought to you by our friends at Manscaped. Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers you precision-engineered tools for your family jewels, so make your testies their besties and get 20% off plus free shipping with our code LOCKA at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping at manscaped.com and use our code LOCKA. I promise you, your balls will thank you. We have an unbelievable episode today with dating scientist Logan Urie. We got a lot to talk about before that with March Madness coming up and just other things that's happened in our lives in general this week. I do want to start. I want to say what up to the boys, but I want to start with the South Park special because it was so fucking funny. And Cappy, I know you're going to make fun of me for the Helwani stuff on Twitter. So I'll just I'll tee you up for that. Just rip me. Go for it.
What's up, everybody? Yeah, I'll get into that in a second, but it's a great interview we got coming. I'm sorry I missed it once again. Was on the road in Utah. We'll get into the air quality in Utah. I'm going to talk about that for a little bit too. But yeah, let's talk about South Park real quick for a second. And let's talk about your tweet at Ariel Helwani. Like, are you kidding me, Johnny? Come on, you got to be better than that.
I was just trying to get him to say something about South Park. And then, you know, I wanted to give my own perspective. I don't want to speak for you guys, you know?
No, it's actually hilarious, though, sometimes. Like, when people ask me, they're like, who is that on the, who's running the Locker Room Twitter account? Is that Johnny? Like, because then you get caught, like, doing something like that. And yeah, Ariel, of course, calls you out for it.
Which I love.
Yeah, Ariel's amazing. I mean, we like when people shit on us, so keep doing it. But the South Park episode was hilarious. They never cease to amaze me. These guys just come out. They're like the Simpsons, but better, in my opinion.
Those guys don't miss, man. They don't miss.
No. The Simpsons don't miss either, but these guys do not miss. Just if for those of you who haven't seen it and don't know who South Park is, the listeners, South Park is an amazing, funny show on Netflix. on Netflix.
What am I talking? On Netflix? And are you about to describe South Park to people?
Yeah, no.
It's been around for like 30 years.
I know. What do you know what South Park is?
I'm keeping this in the episode. This is not getting cut.
Okay, that's fine.
Max, did you watch it?
No, I didn't, but I can't believe you just tried to describe South Park.
The thing is, though, I've probably seen every episode of South Park, too, and I just described that so shitty, and you guys should shit on me for that.
You didn't even start. You, like, said one thing, and then
I said it was on Netflix. but seriously though, for the people who haven't seen that, the South Park special, do go see it. See the first one too, the first coronavirus, the pandemic special, I should say. Mm-hmm. That one was hilarious.
This one was the vaccination special. I thought this one honestly was way better than the pandemic special.
They were both equally good in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. And Maxi, I know you've talked about FICO's on here for like months, and I finally got to try it this weekend, and you, my friend, you know your food, because that place was ridiculous. It was Jersey Mike's sub, but like multiply it by two. Like Jersey Mike's subs are huge. This FICO sandwich, I had like a quarter of it, and I literally had a quarter for lunch, and I didn't even finish the other quarter for dinner. I had it for lunch the next day, like three straight meals.
Well, the thing is, it's expensive, but you can space it out so it's two meals.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be lying if I said I didn't eat the whole sub in one sitting. my go-to there. I don't know what you got, but I love the Italian. It's easy. Oh no! Before I even get into what I order, this is the best part about FICO's. When you walk in, Cap, you haven't been there. We'll take you. We'll take you when you're in the city. They have pastrami, big slabs of pastrami, hanging from the ceiling in the back, and you could smell it. So when you open it, when you open the door and walk in, the smell of pastrami. Not pastrami. Fuck prosciutto. Hit you in the face. Why did I say pastrami? Prosciutto.
I don't know.
Prosciutto. Well, over the place this morning. Yeah, you got my mouth watering. I'm not gonna lie to you. But that I tell people this all the time who are not from New York. Like even around here, there's Subway, there's Jersey Mike's. Like, yeah, Jersey Mike's is good, but there's like nothing like a deli or like a FICO's, dude. Nothing. And I haven't had FICO's yet, but just delis in general that are just so fresh.
It's just the chicken cutlet around here, man. You can't get a better chicken cutlet.
Is that what it is? Yeah, dude. The water. Is it the breading? What is it?
I think so. The chicken cutlet on Long Island in New York is just, you literally can't beat it. And Max, to answer your question, I got chicken cutlet, prosciutto, mozzarella, spinach, and balsamic glaze, I believe.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with that.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Next time you go, you'll get the vodka parm.
Oh, my God. Pavlovsky's?
Are you kidding? They have homemade vodka sauce. And the first time I got that sandwich.
It was like the first time I heard the Beatles.
what I did was I went with my brother. I got the Italian. He got the vodka parm. We went half and half. The sauce is so good. I went back and just got the sauce to go.
Did you eat with a spoon?
No, I just started just putting it on everything. You know, when you have like a really good sauce, like yeah. Even if it doesn't match the food you're eating, you're like,
yeah.
Oh, this would taste really good with a nice sauce. I got that.
Put it it's on. Like the, it's like the yum yum sauce at Hibachi. I bottle that shit. Yeah,
literally, but, that is the perfect example, Cap.
Since we got the dating one or a dating expert coming on for the interview, do you guys think like bringing a girl to a FICO's would be a good date spot for a first date?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I posted a picture on there and I had a few girls comment saying like, oh my God, yummy. And I was like, best for shoot in the city. Best for shoot in the city.
It's a great spot. I feel like it'd be good, but it also would be bad because like if I'm taking a girl on a first date, she's going to see me just absolutely just dismantle this sandwich. And at the same time, I feel like some girls are going to be like, I don't want like a big like prosciutto. Perfect.
More for you.
Well, I mean, I hope you don't plan on hanging out with them after because I'd spend 30 minutes in the toilet.
Well, I was also looking at it more, not necessarily a date, like morning after you go and like you get like instead of a breakfast sandwich, you go to FICO's.
Okay.
That's the hangover cure.
Hangover cure.
They got breakfast sandwiches?
Take a big nap. They don't.
This is not sponsored by FICO's.
But we want it to be.
Yeah, we'd love that.
So I actually saw something online. And this was the prompt. It was, would you rather have $30 million or 30 million loyal friends? What would you guys choose?
I mean, I'm going $30 million.
I'm going $30 million and not even looking back.
Okay. So that's exactly what the comment section went with. That's why I brought it up. I think no brainer when you break it down, you choose the 30 million loyal friends.
And I don't need 30 million friends.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But I'll... Laz and Cap, who's someone that comes to mind when you think of like a loyal friend?
Mine is Holden.
Okay.
Mine's my buddy Phil.
Okay. Now think about having 30 million Phils. Now, if you went up to Holden and you asked them for $2, you said, hey, can I get $2? You think they'll give you $2?
1,000%. Yeah.
1,000. All right. So right there, that's a way of making more than $30 million.
It's actually funny. Wait, it's funny you say that because I have once like sent like this is an asshole move, but if you send like 15 Venmo requests for $1, dude, like chances are 10 of your friends are going to give you $1. So like that's an easy way to make $10. That's what you're getting at?
So no, that was just something of me making a point of how easy you can make more than $30 million.
I got
30 million loyal friends.
Hold on, Max. Before you continue, I think I get where you're going. You got 30 million loyal friends. They could all follow you. You got 30 million followers. Then you're going to be social media famous. You're going to be Instagram famous.
No. That's not what he's saying at all.
No. I guess kind of. I'm just saying I think there's a lot. Like if you have 30 million loyal friends, you can make a lot of money if you come out with a product. Like if my buddy Ryan was trying to sell something and he was like, hey, Max, do you mind – like I'm coming out with this, you mind supporting me? You wouldn't even have to ask. I would support them. So if you have 30 million people like that, any business that you launch, whether it's a service business, a product, you have 30 million loyal people coming and supporting that. That's immediately hitting.
Well, let me cut in because you piece of shit. You don't even answer my texts. How are you going to manage answering 30 million people's texts?
Oh, I'll set something up.
You can't keep in touch with 30 million people. No chance.
But they're loyal. I don't need to.
What about this? If I got $30 million, I could buy 30 million loyal friends. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, that would just be a waste.
And it wouldn't be loyal because I'm buying them.
That's true. I don't know. I think I like the friends that I have, but I'm gladly taking $30 million.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do understand your reasoning, though, Max, for sure. Like that's like the typical Max, like thinking outside the box. Like,
yeah,
of course, Max would take 30 million to take 30 million friends.
Well, it makes sense.
I think it does. In 2 years, I think you'd be a multi billionaire if you have 30 million loyal friends.
If I had 30 million friends and I ask each of them for $5, I don't know what the math is, but it's a lot of money.
150. That's 30 times five, Les.
But would it be billion?
No, it would be $150 million.
Okay, yeah, we're not a math podcast.
Before you move on, I got one thing for you on this topic. So what if you had 30 million friends Okay. And the world, just all of a sudden, the world's going to end tomorrow. Okay. Well, you got 30 million friends, but if you had $30 million, maybe you could buy a spaceship to the moon. But if you have 30 million friends, you're just going to die. But if you got the money, there might be a way out. You might be able to find a spaceship or something to go to the moon.
With your friends or alone?
No, I'm saying, like, let's say you took the 30 million friends and you find out the world's ending tomorrow. Yeah. Then you're fucked. But if you took the $30 million instead of the 30 million friends, then you got the money to find a way out of it.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, I think I'd rather die than spend time on the moon by myself.
Well, no, it would just be all the wealthy people.
The things that you come up with sometimes. Oh my God.
So we got March Madness coming up. I know Maxie's hard as a rock. Johnny's hard as a rock. You guys both are, but
I'm also hard as a rock.
I know you are. I'm definitely very excited. It's a great time of the year, great time for basketball. Obviously, we didn't get to have this last year, so it's going to be very exciting. But Max came up with a good idea. I know everyone's got their picks, everyone's got multiple brackets, but what's your guys' Cinderella story this year? Just to make a splash, maybe not make it all the way, but just make a little splash of Rooney and cheese.
I'm going to go with mine. And I, for some reason, I feel like Max is the same one as me, but I don't know. Mine is the St. Bonaventure Bonnies.
I like them. I mean, I'll tell you this right now. If this bracket is chalky by any means, I will finish in dead last. Duke's not in it. I'm going balls to the wall and just picking a ton of upsets. I'm looking at my bracket right now. I have five Cinderellas. And when I mean
to go where?
At least the Sweet 16.
Oh, really? Wow. I think I might have a couple
like
too.
Seed 10 or higher.
I know I have like Winthrop, St. Bonaventure.
So who's your, out of all the Cinderellas you have though, Maxie, who's your like?
So outside the box.
That you think it's like, I'm sure you have a bunch of Cinderellas making the Sweet 16, like you said, but what's that one Cinderella that you got making a couple Final Fours? I know you got to have one.
No 10 seed or higher I have in the Final Four, but I'm going to say there are two teams. I'm going to give two because one is super interesting for me. Abilene Christian. They were a former Division II school. They have all these like weird defensive schemes. I was reading up on them, watching some film. I love them. The fact that they were a former Division II team, that is literally the writing on the wall. You know you're going to hear it 5,000 times. Stamp it, Sweet 16. The other one that I'm more confident in is UNC Greensboro. They got Florida State round one. I got them in my Sweet 16.
I'm going to be straight up honest. You know me, I'm not a big basketball guy, but I do love college basketball. I've always loved college basketball. I don't know like specific teams and I haven't done as much research as you guys, but when Max brought this up, he did say that the Cinderella may be like 7-8 and higher to pick a Cinderella. So I'm going with Georgetown, baby.
That's a good one.
Hot. They're hot.
Yeah, exactly. Just like you said, extremely hot. Patrick Ewing. I'm surprised. I was expecting one of you guys to put those in there. But yeah, I expect them to make a huge splash.
I definitely have them winning the first two rounds, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So you have them in your Sweet 16.
Yeah.
So if it comes down to Georgetown, UNC, Greensboro, we'll have a nice little showdown.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious.
In the round of 32.
I'll tell you what, though. I'm very confident that Gonzaga will not win. That as a podcast, I think we should tweet out that if Gonzaga does win, someone who retweets it will get $150. So if you guys are on board with that.
I'm on board, but I have them winning it all.
Okay. Well, I'm very confident that they won't.
So I'm on board. I'm a little not as much on board as you, Johnny, now that Max said he's got him winning in most of his brackets. But I'm with it. I'm down.
Just one, Cap.
Okay, just one then? Okay. Then I'm in for it.
Well, it is stated. So if Gonzaga wins, to one person who retweets our tweet, we'll give $150.
Before we hop into a little Oy Vey action, I was just in Utah this weekend. We played the Utah Grizzlies. I don't know if you guys have ever been to like in the mountains. I'm assuming you guys have been to like Colorado and stuff like that, maybe a couple times or so. But dude, I playing hockey in like just like an area like this, I've never experienced it before in my life. Just like the air quality is so low. Like you seriously, like after intermissions, you have trouble like breathing. Like kids were taking like oxygen pills and shit. It was pretty crazy. I've never just like played in an environment where I've like actually been like my cardio shit.
Did you not play Air Force?
No, I never played at Air Force.
Oh yeah, it was the same thing there. It's just in the mountains. It's definitely hard to breathe. Yeah, I feel you there.
Well, yeah, I specifically wanted to get your opinion on it. I don't know if you ever played in like an atmosphere like that and actually like experienced the same thing.
No, I mean, honestly, like my teammates talked about going to Air Force. Like I remember my senior year, they were like, dude, Air Force is the worst place to play. Like it's so hard to breathe. I was like, is it really that bad? Or like, is it all in your head? And then like literally first drill in practice, I'm like, holy fuck. Like, this is no joke. Like, it's so hard to breathe.
Dude, unbelievable. But yeah, let's hop into a little Oy Vey action. I'm going to start, and it actually has to do with my time in Utah this past weekend. So, Oy Vey, holy cow, oh my God. I actually had a little Cappy, little Jordan Cappy flu game. Everybody was like, oh, Cappy's flu game. But we ended up losing 4-1. So it really wasn't as good of a Jordan flu game. So I ended up getting like a stomach virus before the game. It was pretty miserable. But I want to give myself a little pat on the back. I battled through it, was like dry heaving in between periods. It was something I've never experienced before in my life, boys. But I battled through it and had myself a little Cappy flu game. So we'll take it.
Were you pooping a lot?
Oh, I was pooping plenty, dude. I was pooping nonstop every day. No, but that's my problem right now. Thank God nothing's coming out of the front end, but a lot is coming out of the back end.
Have you ever used a bidet? Oh, sorry, Max, you can go.
I was going to say, flu game in Utah. That's second story I've heard. Do you eat the pizza?
No. Wait. Jordan's was
in Utah, too? Yeah, it was in Utah.
Oh, my God. See,
you didn't get that's why your friends were saying the Jordan thing?
Nope, I didn't.
Oh, my God.
But no, I've never used a bidet before. Why?
Well, I was gonna say I used a bidet for the first time this weekend, and I'll never shit the same ever again. I mean, like, oh my God, dude, Ellie got her bathroom redone. I went to her house like the first time since New Year's, and she has heated floors, heated toilet seat, and a bidet, and it is literally like duty paradise. I will never ever think about pooping as peacefully as I did in that moment.
Now, do they have toilet paper?
Yeah, they still have toilet paper because you still need toilet paper
because like it's wet.
Yeah. There's a drying thing in the bidet.
That's what I'm saying. You kind of don't need toilet paper.
Maybe I did it wrong because I still needed it.
What's the movie with James Franco where he meets the parents?
Why him?
Yeah, why him? When the mom uses the bidet and stuff like that.
Yep.
And it's got like all the controls in the house.
Yeah, with Keegan-Michael Key, and he's like controlling it, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And they play like Kiss in the background.
Yeah, it's so funny.
I've never used it though before. I'm always like tempted, you know.
Oh, you're gonna freak out.
Yeah, see, like that's the thing. I'm like, I feel like I got a sensitive booty.
Maxie, what do you got?
So golf is back. I played my first real round, and like the thing that people say is after winter ends and you play your first round when spring's about to come, you suck. That was not the case for me. I played the best round of my life and had my own personal record. I shot an 88, broke 90 for the first time. And played the next day with some buddies and was talking a big game and had an awful round. So it was the golf gods. They knew that I was getting a little cocky, was talking a little bit, and stuck it right to me.
They humbled you.
They humbled me, exactly.
Mm. Speaking of golf, Maxie, shout out to Justin Thomas, my buddy. Hit him plus 500, won a shit ton of money. That's why I'm saying it. So pretty cool.
That's big time. I did not touch that.
Yeah. Not Michael Thomas, to confirm.
Yeah, to confirm.
I'm saving my money for March Madness.
Yeah. I'm actually going to stick in the theme of golf with mine. This is actually kind of interesting. You guys have watched Friends before, obviously, right?
Yeah.
So you know like the ugly naked guy scene? Yes. Like how they're always looking at the ugly naked guy? Like when they're all staring at the guy across the street in the city.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Ugly naked guy. So I was with my camp friends, Josh Herman and Holden Rosengrupp, and we're like playing Rummy Cube, and I think Holden or Josh was like, is that guy naked? And there's some guy, literally, I imagine Max, honestly, like practicing his golf swing in his like living room apartment. We saw it from across the street, like you could see in New York City through the windows. So like immediately we stopped playing Rummy Cube, and obviously we're like staring at this guy trying to figure out if he's naked or not, like literally staring at him, all three of us out the window, like trying to figure it out. And like he's like sideways, so we can't tell if he's naked. And then like after 2 minutes, like sure enough, he turns around, we see butt cheeks, and it was just like, it was like really funny. But the whole point I'm trying to make is like, I don't care if it's like this guy was like whatever, an average looking guy or whatever, but if it's like the most unattractive person in the world and I see someone naked, I'm going to stare, like no matter who it is.
I can just picture you and your boys just like fucking throwing like fives on the table. He's naked. He's naked.
Yeah, no.
He's naked. No.
That's literally what we were doing. And we like FaceTimed our friend Reed, and we're like, Reed, look, like, is he naked? Can you tell?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, Eddie cannot tell.
Finally, he turns around and he's like, oh, I knew it.
Across the street of Manhattan.
No, but it was, dude, like, don't you guys agree though? Like, no matter if you saw someone naked in the window, like, no matter what they look like, you're staring.
I mean, not for as lengthy of a period of time as you are. If a guy, there's no shot. I'm like, oh yeah, that guy's definitely naked, just like licking my chops. Like, no, that's not gonna happen.
We were so excited when we saw butt cheeks. You guys have no idea.
I know. Trust me. I'm.
We're like, he's naked.
So you're telling me that. So about how long did you guys look? You're telling me.
Probably like literally 3 minutes.
Okay, so that's not as terrible. No, that's pretty long. I'm just kidding.
It's pretty long. Yeah, it's pretty long.
I mean, it's a pretty ridiculous thing to like one see and to see someone doing.
Yeah, like he was literally practicing his gobswing like naked in his honestly, living room for all Manhattan to see.
Honestly, Laz, I was expecting you would have done it for longer.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I thought you were gonna say I was expecting you to be naked practicing your swing, which I probably would be. That easily could have been me.
That's also what I would expect. But I'm saying I could see you trying to figure that out, and then if you really didn't know, running across the street trying to figure out what apartment
knock on the door.
Knock on the door.
Yeah, no, I would.
All right. But before we kick it over to the interview, let me talk about one of our wonderful sponsors, Bagel Boss. When thinking about Long Island bagels, there's no place to look besides Bagel Boss. They are amazing. They got every bagel you want. Everything is at your go-to. Mine's a little egg bagel toasted with maybe a little lox cream cheese. I love that all day. But they deliver out of state. Anything you want, please visit them online, bagelofthemonth.com. And don't forget to use our code LOCKA for 10% off. That's LOCKA for 10% off.
We do have one sad thing to bring up before we get into the interview with Logan. I don't know. I mean, we're obviously a big part of the hockey community on this podcast, and we just want to, I don't even know, like sending best wishes or whatever, sending love to the Dynamo team in St. Petersburg as their defenseman, 19-year-old captain, Timur Fizudinov. I might have botched the pronunciation, but
yeah,
he's a 19-year-old kid who got hit in the head with a puck during the game and ended up passing away the next day. And it's just like, that hits home. Like, dude, that, like, I got hit in the face with a puck. Like, I was lucky that it knocked my teeth out. Like, that could have easily been me. Like, it's such a crazy thing. Like, you suit up for a game with your best friends, you go out to compete, and like people say, you never know when your last game is or live every day, you know. But in this case, man, like, oh my God, it's just so heartbreaking to think of like this kid playing the game he loves and then it takes his life away.
Oh no, dude, it's absolutely heartbreaking. Just talking about it with some of my teammates this past weekend, when it actually occurred, and like just like going out in the games, especially at like the pro level. This stuff happens on a daily basis. You dump the puck in the zone, like guys try and block pucks. Guys try and block pucks with their sticks, and the puck ramps up and hits them in the face. Like, you never see something like this coming. And, you know, I can't even
imagine it happening. Like, it's just
speechless. Speechless when I saw it. Speechless when it happened. Praying for his family, hoping everything's fine with that. And yeah, just heartbreaking moment for sure in the hockey community. Other than that, though, we're really excited to bring you guys this interview with Logan. We know you guys are going to love it.
This girl grew up in South Florida and was bat mitzvahed at Temple Beth Am. She is a behavioral scientist, turned dating coach, and the author of How to Not Die Alone. Welcome to the Locker Room Podcast, our new friend, Logan Urie. Logan, it's so nice to have you here.
I've never been introduced with my bat mitzvah location before, but my mom will be very happy to hear this.
Yeah, that's something that we love to do. We love to tell everybody where our guest is, bat mitzvah. And it's funny, I mean, I want to give my co-host Justin Kaffmaster a shout out. He's traveling right now. He plays pro hockey, but I'm pretty sure, and if I'm wrong, he's going to shit on me, but I'm pretty sure he was bat mitzvah at the same place you were. That's so funny.
That's really funny. Okay, small world.
Very small. And Jewish people love saying that, right? Very small.
Oh, yeah. World. We love our small Jewish world.
All the Jews say that. I actually also want to give a shout out to another friend, my friend Brett Paul. His first time on Clubhouse, he listened to one of your rooms, and he like literally told me, this is the quote, first time I ever used the app, listened to the whole thing, so interesting, she's great, she hooked me to Clubhouse.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's great. Yeah, I mean, we could have a long conversation about Clubhouse. I think sometimes it's really fun and interesting and different. Sometimes it feels like an extended conference call, but yeah, I've really enjoyed the conversations I've had there.
Are you active on it? Because I know people tell me to be more active on it, but
no.
I don't really...
I have a couple friends that are definitely like swinging for the fences in terms of trying to grow their audience. I did three book events on Clubhouse, and I think each of them went well. Like, I had a good co-host who asked me questions, and I felt like people engaged, but I don't just go on there at night. Like, I don't find it to be fun. I would basically be doing it like for sort of like growing my business, getting the word out there. But I know some people, it's like how they like to spend their time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm one of those people yet. I'm trying to get into it a little more, but I don't know. I think it's kind of like a little fad. I don't know if it's going to die down, but.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, there's an element of it where it's like when people can meet up in person again safely, are they still going to want to do this? But now that there's so many people on it and there's all these niche rooms, I still think that it serves a purpose even beyond COVID. But yeah, I mean, I've been on there since May of last year, which is pretty early. And I never really like invested time in it, or I'm not like a super early adopter with like millions of followers. So yeah, I think there's pros and cons.
I do want to get into the super serious stuff, though.
Sure.
I know you wrote a paper called Porn to Be Wild about college students' porn habits.
That's true.
I need to hear about the study. And like, I'm just wondering if I give off a certain porn vibe.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I would like to hear you categorize your porn habits. But I mean, no, I mean, I know we're joking around, but it's true. I've always had these two interests, right? Psychology, the science of decision making, and then also sex, dating, and relationships. And so one of the first ways that I combined the two was writing this paper in college, Porn to Be Wild, about the porn watching habits of Harvard students. But it's interesting. I found all these different ways to apply those two different interests. So actually at Google, my first job was running the porn pod, which was running advertising for the people who advertised on Google.com, who were sex toy operators and porn companies and all of that. And then now, of course, I do dating coaching and I work at Hinge and I've written this book. But it really is, how do I take these different parts of my personality and combine the two?
Well, yeah. Well, I just need to know how you like actually study college kids' porn habits. I'm like genuinely curious about the actual study of it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was a long time ago, but basically it was a sociology class. And so we were looking at Marshall McLuhan's media theory. And he talks about hot media and cold media and what it's like to consume media from the radio versus TV and how it changes how you feel about the content. And so what I was doing was I put forth this thesis that people in college at the time, and so this would have been around 2007, 2008, the thesis was that they had gone through puberty at the same time that the internet has gone through puberty. So when they got interested in porn, porn was going from magazine images to static images online to short videos to full on, you know, long form uploaded video porn, whatever it was, and sort of analyzing how those changes affected how people interacted with porn. In terms of the logistics, I think I just sent out an email across a couple email lists that was like, want to talk about your porn habits? Like knowing at the time that it was a little clickbaity, and then just doing interviews with different people, asking them the same set of questions, just kind of understanding what was the norm, what was the outlier. And so, basically just investigating how people consume porn, what kind of differences across gender orientation, time of first porn use, all that stuff.
I thought you were just going door to door at the dorms, knocking on people's rooms and seeing their search history.
Honestly, that would have been great. Wait, what? Okay, what about you? How do you categorize your porn habits?
How do I categorize my porn habits? Well, I'll honestly confess, last night I went on YouTube to watch the best lesbian kissing movie scenes because I was just like in a weird phase.
Oh, that's why. Why did you go to YouTube versus going to a porn site?
Because I felt more vulnerable and I wanted to be like a little intimate. So I just wanted to see kissing. I didn't want to see any sex.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, so you sort of opted into the fact that it would be censored.
Yeah, pretty much.
Cool.
I guess I wouldn't really call that porn.
Well, it depends what your goal was.
I was super embarrassed. So I like Snapchatted my friends. Like, is there anything worse than like being at rock bottom when you watch YouTube kissing as porn?
I think that's kind of sweet.
You know what? I think so too. And hopefully my girlfriend's listening to this and appreciates that because I miss her. But I know that was like a long time ago, that study. But more recently, you wrote a book, How to Not Die Alone. And one of the chapters I'm super interested in that I think is so relevant to today is just meeting people in real life as opposed to on the dating apps that, you know, are so common now. But you talk about going to events, finding events. But I feel like that's a lot easier said than done. Mm-hmm. And people don't know exactly where they should go or how to meet people organically anymore, especially now after all this. So like, I want to hear you kind of like break that down and just talk about
it. Yeah, it's so interesting. So I wrote the book before COVID, and then I was editing it during COVID, and I was like, what do I want to keep? What do I want to remove? And I did think about making it more COVID specific. And then I was like, I just don't want to date it. I want this to be a book that lives on people's shelves for a long time. It doesn't feel like a COVID guy. It feels like it talks about universal truths. And so I kept the chapter, How to Meet People IRL. And it will become more relevant to daters when the pandemic is over. And so basically the idea that I put forth in that chapter is called the events decision matrix. And basically the idea is that a lot of people say, I know I should be going to events and I know I should be meeting more people, but what event do I go to and how do I know what to prioritize? And so it's a 2x2 matrix, which is basically a fancy way of saying there's an x-axis and a y-axis. And so any possible event, let's say you get an event from your temple, you get an event from your alumni group, whatever it is, you plot it on here. And so basically you answer two questions. What is the likelihood that I'll enjoy this event? And what is the likelihood that I will interact with somebody at this event? And so the point of this is that let's say you go to an event that you think you'll enjoy, even if you don't meet anyone, it won't be a waste. And if it's the type of event that you'll enjoy, it'll bring out the best side of you. And then the second one, more obviously, is you don't want to go to an event where people don't talk to each other because then you're not going to meet someone. Let's say that you see an event which is a movie marathon from your favorite director. Okay, high likelihood you'll enjoy it, low likelihood of interaction. Let's say that there's an event which is, you know, a bike repair workshop. People will probably talk to each other, so high likelihood of interaction, but you don't like bikes, so low likelihood that you'll enjoy it. And so anything that falls in the upper right-hand corner, high likelihood of interaction and high likelihood of you'll enjoy it, you should go to those events because they'll bring out the best side of you. You'll have fun even if you don't meet anyone, and you're much more likely to actually get to know someone. And so when you're thinking about all the different events to go to, really try to go to events that fit in that upper right-hand corner.
What's crazy to me is just how much of a science like dating really is. I mean, mm-hmm. I just graduated college last May. So like up until this point, it was never like you have to go places to meet people to find someone. Yeah. It kind of just happened like at a high school or college, like a college party. But then once you graduate and you're thrown into this real world, and then all of a sudden, like the pressure's like literally hits right away. I feel like that you have to like think about something serious. College is over. You're an adult. You know, it's just crazy how scientific it really can be.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the main points of my book, right? Is people say, oh, you're trying to turn us into robots. You're trying to turn us into rational creatures. And look, love is natural. You're born knowing how to love. Love is organic, but you're not born knowing how to date. You're not born knowing how to fill out a dating profile. You're not born knowing how to choose a partner who's going to make a great, you know, long-term spouse. And so that's where I come in. I'm really trying to say, this is what the science says about decision-making. This is what the science says about what matters for long-term relationships. And you can use that to make better decisions and get into a better relationship.
But when you think about dating profiles also, and like, you know, the Hinges and all the different, the Locks Club will shout out to, like all the different dating apps, isn't it kind of, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is here, but when you originally match with these people and you meet them, you might not even be talking to the actual person. Like some of my friends ask me, like, what should I say to this girl? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, there's 10 different voices coming at this one person. And I think that kind of skews the whole thing a little bit. I mean, like, what are your thoughts on just the concept of dating apps and like,
oh, talking? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely heard that. I've heard like, oh, he and I had the best text banter, but when I met up with him in person, he was a mute. And it's like, maybe he's either really clever when he has 20 minutes to come up with an answer, or maybe he had a whole control room that was helping him write that. Yeah. And so the point is, get to the date faster. Like, you're not dating somebody for their texting. Like, yes, that's like part of the stage, but get to the date, because what if you spent 6 weeks having the best text banter with somebody, and then when you met up, there was no chemistry? Well, you should have gone on the date sooner and like get on the phone, get on a video chat, because I think you're right. A lot of people do get help for texting, and you're not dating that person's tech support. You're dating that person.
It's super, I mean, it's super interesting to me. Like my friends, I'm turning 25 and they're still like asking me what to say to a girl. I'm like, dude.
Oh, that'll carry on. But you know, one question for you, now that I know when you graduated from college, like when you were in college, did you use dating apps? Because that is so different from when I was in college, and you basically dated somebody from high school, and then you probably broke up around Thanksgiving of your freshman year, and then you dated the people at your college.
So I actually played college hockey, and I used dating apps when we were like when we were on the road at other schools. That's when I would use the apps because I wanted to see like what girls went to that school, and I would just try to flirt with girls like for that weekend. But I actually met my girlfriend going into junior year of college. So my junior senior year, I had a girlfriend, and I don't think dating apps were really around my freshman and sophomore year. It was really just Tinder, and that was like. That was like Tinder was you get home from the bar drunk and you just swipe until someone wants to talk to you. Like that was really what it was.
And then did you meet up with those people?
Never. No. I'm not. There are people that do that. I was okay. Never the meet up with the dating app kind of people.
But, okay. So when you were in college, if people had girlfriends or boyfriends, they mostly were other people from school, not somebody from like a few colleges away.
I think it varied. I mean, there was definitely long distance relationships and then the local colleges like in the area. Definitely range. And hey, Maxie,
what's up, guys? Sorry, I'm late.
No problem. Hi.
But I'll chime in on this conversation.
Maxie's the single one on the podcast.
I am single, but in college, no, never used the dating app. There were actually a lot of colleges around me. I went to Lehigh, but everything would be like, go to a bar, you go to a party, meet someone from class, and that was really how it was.
Yeah.
Which was great. Get out of college and COVID hits and, you know, the game changes.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah. Johnny, where did you go to college?
I went to UMass Amherst and then I transferred to a small school called Mercyhurst, if you've heard of it.
Okay.
But I was in the Boston area for a bit.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like the hockey team was like such a fun part of my college experience, like going to hockey games. A lot of the hockey players lived in my dorm. Like, anyway, just funny to think about. Yeah, funny to think back to Harvard.
I went to a couple of Harvard guys.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And actually, a good friend of ours and a friend of the podcast, Adam Fox, who played at Harvard, now on the New York Rangers from Long Island.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
Are you in California right now?
I'm usually in Oakland, but I'm actually in Houston right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I love Houston. I love Texas. Best.
Yeah. So wait, who does your co-host play for?
He plays for the Allen Americans in Texas, actually, if you've been to Allen or heard of Allen.
That's so interesting. I don't know that many. I didn't know there was a whole Jewish hockey player contingent.
Well, that's why we started the podcast. That was the original concept.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But that's so cool.
I do want to get back into the dating stuff a little bit.
Let's talk about it.
What we were just talking about, just meeting people in person. I've had this debate so many times with my friends. And obviously, like, confidence levels are different between people. Mm-hmm. But, like, I want to give you the scenario of, let's say I'm at a bar and this girl comes up to me and says, hey, my friend thinks you're really cute. Mm-hmm. Like, that's basically it. My friends say they feel extra pressure now to go talk to that person, where I'm like, oh, okay, like the hard part's over. I know this girl's attracted to me. Like, I'll talk to her later. Like, I don't need to focus on her the whole night. Like, I know half the battle is won. So I'm going to have a fun night. And like, you know, when I come around to it, she thinks I'm cute already. I just will make sure I don't say anything stupid. Like, what do you think about that? Because there are a lot of people who feel extra pressure when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, now that I know when you graduated from college, I'm so much more excited to talk to you because I think like the younger people are like the more I have to learn from their experiences because like I think things are a little different. And so I'll kind of tell you what comes to mind when I hear that and then you can tell me if it resonates. And so there's sort of a cultural understanding of people in their early 20s that, you know, you're a digital native, you spent your whole life texting people, probably, you know, your first time flirting, your first time asking somebody out, your first time breaking up was all done through technology. And so there's actually this fear of rejection, of having hard conversations in person. And so what I think is maybe going on for your friends is that they're like, on a dating app, we have to match first. So I know that I like her. She knows that she likes me. And then the dating app tells us you're a match. And if I want to see her, I text her and ask her out. If I don't want to see her, I ghost her or I break up with her. And so they actually prefer doing things through the conduit of technology because it feels less scary. And so for your friend, they're like, shit, now I'm on the spot. I have to talk to her without asking my 10 friends what to say. Yeah. And so it feels like there's actually just like a fearfulness and a lack of confidence where they're just like, wouldn't it be easier to do it in my phone?
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. And it's funny that you said the matching thing kind of just brought me to this TikTok that I saw. Are you on TikTok?
No, but I like to hear about TikToks.
I saw this TikTok and it was like, I think dating apps should match the people that both swiped left on each other. Like one person thinks they're better than the other and the other person thinks they're better than the other. It's kind of funny to think about.
So funny. I love that. Yeah.
Isn't that funny to think about?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. No, back to my friends though. I think it's just like all they can think about in their mind is that one person after they hear that, you know?
Oh, that's interesting. But what if, is it ever like, well, I'm not interested in her, but now there's pressure on me? Or is it just like, I don't want to screw up? Like, what do you think is their internal monologue?
I think it's more so like, I don't want to say something stupid when I already know that like the odds are in my favor.
Right. And so, I mean, I see this play out in all different ways. So like, imagine two people match on a dating app. Instead of getting each other's phone numbers and texting, it's like, oh, I'll follow you on Snapchat. I'll follow you on Instagram. It's like, everything is like, let me be as passive as possible. And maybe one day I'll make a move. And like, I just think fortune favors the bold. Like, go up to her, see if you like her, screw it up. You'll never see her again. It's fine. Like, there's just kind of like a feeling of like, I want to get it right, and I'll get it right more if I can take my time and do it through technology.
What do you think about Instagram DMs then? Because I'm a huge, I actually met my girlfriend technically through a DM.
Yeah. I mean, I do want to hear what you have to say. I'll tell you my hot take, but I'm happy to be proven wrong, which is when I see that thing of people putting on their dating app profile, instead of saying who they are, they say, you know, follow me here. I'm like, first of all, are you just trying to get follows? But also it's like, then social media becomes a performance. Then it becomes all these guys who might be interested in me are looking at me to see if my life is interesting, to see how I look in a bikini, to see if I do fun activities. And then it's like social media is already a performance, but it's becoming even more pressure. And then you're like passively observing someone like, oh, they like running. I like running. It's like, get to the point. Like the same thing we talked about. It's like maybe their social media life looks fun, but they're actually pretty fake and they're just doing it for the gram. And so I think in general, when it comes to like getting to know someone, it's better to be faster and get to the date sooner. In terms of like seeing someone you're interested on Instagram and sliding into their DMs, like, I don't know, why is that a problem? It's like, you can't meet at a wedding right now because there are no weddings. You need to have new ways of meeting people.
Mm-hmm. I think I actually heard you talk about the whole Instagram thing on either Jared Fried's podcast, shout out to him, or Lindsay Metzler's. I forgot what you said, but I think someone said it where like the more fun you actually have in life, the less you're showing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think I was talking to Lindsay about that where I was like, the fact that my husband is not on social media.
Yes, I
really respect that. And it's so true because it's like I care a lot what people think about me and I care enough for the two of us. And so the fact that he hasn't been on social media since, you know, 2016, it's better. And yeah, it's true. Who in life is saying I'm having the best time and I need to broadcast it? It's when you're not having a good time and you want to sort of convince yourself you are, that you're uploading that picture. Like, I'm having a really good time right now talking to you. I don't wish that I was taking a picture of this because I'm in the moment with you. When I step outside the moment to document it, I'm having a less good time.
Well, I hate to break the news to you, but we are going to post a boomerang at the end of the interview for our social media.
Is that true?
Yeah, like toward the end, just to promote like who we interviewed today and who we're going
to
have on.
Oh my God. So okay, not to make myself
like an idiot.
No. Not to make myself seem so old because I'm not so old, but I feel like it might be my first boomerang.
No way. Perfect. We'll break the ice for you then.
I love it. No, we can definitely, as long as we are consenting to creating it together, I don't think we're out of the moment.
Perfect. That's the best quote I ever heard in my life. Like, sometimes it's better to live in the moment than Snapchat it or whatever, you know?
Totally.
Yeah. But
I also agree, if someone has to Instagram something once a week to show that they're having a good time, that's a red flag. Nobody needs to broadcast that. There are some.
Unless we're golfing.
Yeah. I mean, okay. For me, I haven't posted an Instagram in, I think, a little over 2 years. Mm-hmm. Like, I also never got into that. I never felt
right. And some girl might look at your profile and be like, oh, does he not have friends? It's like, no, he's just living his life.
Maxi has great friends. I'm proud to be one of them.
Yeah, I see it as a green flag, not a red flag. But I think, I mean, this gets into a way bigger topic about dating, which is, people make assumptions about the dumbest things. And so I'd love to ask you two this question. So this week I did a book club event with 12 women in their mid-20s, mostly live in New York. And some of them work in finance, you know, different jobs. And they were saying that if a guy doesn't pay for the first date, it's a red flag. What did you say?
I thought that was the question. So I was
asking. Well, no, I mean, that is the crux of the question, but it's basically like, I was pretty surprised. And I was like, some of you probably make triple what this guy makes. And like, why are you assuming that this is a sign of he's broke? He's not generous. He can't provide for me. I was like, you're just drawing all these conclusions from one date. Maybe he's a feminist and think that men and women are equal and they should split it. And so anyway, I'm actively kind of trying to hear from more people, especially kind of in the same age group, like, what do you think about paying on a date? And what are the stories you hear from the male perspective?
If I take someone out on a date, I'm paying for the meal, no questions asked. I think it's just like, do you open a door for a girl? Yes. It's just like, there's some things that you just do, I guess it's like chivalry type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I honestly pay for people, like if I go out to lunch with a friend of mine, I'll pay for it. And I'm really in no position financially to be doing that. it's just how I grew up. But then again, like, one thing about my girlfriend that is like one of the best things about her is that we are very good with communicating how we spend money on each other.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, if I were single, I guess, like if the girl asked me out and I wasn't as interested in it, I'd still probably pay. But the person who asks the person out should definitely be the one who initiates the paying, I think.
That's what people say. That's what we said on the call. So I was like, the girls were like, okay, well, whoever asked for the date should pay. And then I was like, do you ever ask the guy out? And they're like, no, I wait for him to ask me out. And I'm like, well, then it doesn't really make sense because you're sort of being passive about it from the beginning. And so you're never end up being the one initiating or paying.
Well, let's say you asked me on a date and you wanted to go to Mr. Chow's, which is like the most expensive Chinese place in New York City.
Yeah.
And the bill is $400. Am I supposed to pay all that? Like, I can't do that.
Right. No, I think I would say, I wouldn't choose a very expensive place for the first date, but I think I would either say, let's split it or, you know, you get this one, I'll get the next one. Or I like dates, like, I feel like a fun date is you go to Barry's, one person pays for the class, the other person pays for the smoothies. Like, you kind of have different things you pay for it, and you're not like being tacky and like splitting a bill down the middle, but you're understanding that like people are young and dating is expensive. And I don't know, this is like very much on my mind this week, which is why I'm bringing it up. But I do think that there's something here because it feels like an outdated idea. Like, even chivalry to me is a little outdated because it's like, if I make double what you make, why do you need to pay?
Yeah. I mean, you can feel free to vent to us also, by the way. If you want to talk about it,
no, it's great. I mean, do you have guy friends who are like, damn, I can't go on as many dates as I want because it's so expensive?
I mean, that's me in my friend group, to be honest.
It's actually funny that you're bringing this up because Laz and I had a conversation about this and I said the exact thing. Like, even when I go out with like my buddies, there's always like a few friends that like will go through the entire like item list and want to get like six ways, and they say, oh, the 10. I hate confrontation. I hate that.
Yeah.
Even if I'm like on the lower end of the bill, I'll just be like, all right, fine. I'll give the, like, here's the $20. I don't care. Like, let's get this over with. No conflict.
But that's also the issue about getting older, I think, too, and like not being in college. Like, some of my friends make more than I do, obviously, and I want to do the same things they want to do. And, you know, sometimes I feel pressured. Like, if my friends say, let's go to this bar, and, you know, the cover's $80, and then they're going to spend an extra $150 on top of that. And I'm like, dude, I literally just can't afford to do that right now. Like, I can't go. And they're like, dude, don't worry, just come. We'll figure it out later. Like, I'll cover you. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, you'll cover me? Yeah, I'll go. And then, like, 2 weeks later, they Venmo request me for, like, $150. I'm like, what the fuck? I told you I wouldn't go. And you talked me into it. Now, like, fuck you.
Yeah, I do think it gets even more intense as you get older because people have just been working longer. And so, like, those compound salary differences just, you know, over time, people make a really different amount. And, yeah, that is kind of a nice part about college is everyone is not exactly, but people are way more on the same footing, especially if you're eating in a dorm, living in a dorm, eating in a dining hall, things like that.
Well, it definitely affects friendships for sure as you get older, right? Because everyone wants to run with the crowd that they can run with.
Mm-hmm.
And some people some people can't keep up.
Yeah. And then hopefully your friends see that and, you know, say, hey, let's meet up in the park and get sandwiches instead of going to Mr. Chow's.
So if you guys are listening, I just want a free weekend off you.
Yeah. And if your mom is listening, deposit some money in his account.
No, don't do that, mom. I don't know. I don't like spending my parents' money at the bar. I feel like an asshole.
How do really those conversations come up? Because I don't really tell people how much I make, nor do I care how much other people make. So when, like, if you were go on a date or anything or go out with friends, like you say, oh, this person makes three times as much as me, et cetera. Mm-hmm. How do you know that? And
it's a good question. And I think that's part of the issue is that, like, I heard these people talk about, you know, I want to go, I want to date with a guy. He didn't pay. That was a deal breaker. I'm not going to see him again. And there's just a perception that like the man should pay. But because we don't know what other people make, why assume that that's like something comfortable for that person? And why not do the generous thing, which is split it or, you know, take turns on different rounds, things like that. And so particularly these women lived in New York and worked in finance. And let's say, you know, we didn't get into all the details, but let's say they're dating a guy who's a law school student. Like, it's unlikely that the law school student in any capacity would make more than the person in finance. And so if you just looked at the person with more resources should pay, in that case, that would be the woman who works in finance instead of this, what I think is an outdated version of things, which is whoever invites should pay. And that's, you know, 9 out of 10 times the guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of deal breakers, we do have some questions from listeners.
Sure.
One of them I know for a fact that you know, the other one, not sure. But the first question is from Alana, Alana Dunn, and she asked, is it a legitimate deal breaker if they don't like dogs or don't want to spend time with dogs?
Oh, that's so funny. Yes. Well, Alana loves her dog a lot, so it might be a deal breaker for her. Mm-hmm. But I would say, when you look at the science of relationships and what matters for long-term relationships, a lot of things that we think matter don't matter. And those are things like looks and money, right? They matter somewhat, but there's something called adaptation. Like over time, things just become less important because you get used to them. So even if you don't have a lot of money and then you get a lot of money, in the beginning, it will feel great, but eventually you actually just get used to your circumstances. And same thing with similar personalities, shared hobbies. People think they matter so much, and they matter, but not as much as people think. And then when it comes to things like pets, I mean, unless you're a veterinarian and you're always surrounded by dogs, I just wouldn't put that in the deal breaker category. It's fine to have different interests from your partner. It's fine to not have the same passions. It's much more about what side of you does the other person bring out? How do you feel when you're around them? Can you make hard decisions together? And so I'd say, unless you are somebody who your entire life surrounds dogs, you know, you're surrounded by dogs and that's your whole world, I think you'd be perfectly fine to be with someone who has a different perspective on pets than you do.
I'm going to say that for me, it is a deal breaker. Okay. I don't trust people that don't like dogs. There's, how do you not like a dog? I don't get it.
Yeah. I hear you. Some of my closest friends are like, I don't hate dogs. I'm just not that passionate about them. And so anyway, I have seen some great people who are like that, but I understand what you mean. You know,
I'm not saying they're bad people. I just don't trust them.
Dogs are pretty great. I think we're aligned. We're pro dogs here. This is a pro dog podcast in case you were confused.
It definitely, all three of us have dogs. Well, I mean the three, me, Max and,
yeah,
and Justin.
That's so nice. I don't have a dog. I had a dog growing up, but definitely pro dog.
What was its name?
My dog's name was Snowy. Mm-hmm. Now you know my password to everything.
Oh, really?
That's so true.
That's so true. That's actually the main reason that people get dogs, is that they have a password.
Is your password your dog, Max?
I have four passwords, and I kind of like recycle them. It's like, if you know how you have to reset your password if you can't go in? Mm-hmm. And they say, you've used this before. I have four. So if I can't get, like, if I have to put all four in and they're all wrong, I'm
in trouble. Yeah. You're in big trouble. Well, I think I might lose on the password thing. My password, I only use one password, and it's when I was an upper senior at sleepaway camp.
That's so cute. Upper senior is such a cute term.
Yeah, haven't turned the page.
Where did you go to sleepaway camp?
Camp Equinox and Blue Ridge, it's called in Pennsylvania. Did you go to camp?
I did. I actually went to Blue Star, which is in the Blue Ridge Mountains, I think, of, I'm forgetting all this, of North Carolina. But then I also, wait, where did you say it was?
It was in Pennsylvania, but it's called Blue Ridge. Weird coincidence.
And then also my sister, is that the Poconos?
I think so, yeah, or around there. If I'm wrong, my family's going to shit on me because we're...
God, I'm forgetting all my camp stuff. But I also went to another camp that I think was also there. Anyway, obviously, probably on every episode, you end up talking about summer camp.
Yeah, sometimes it's like an hour, and other times we've been trying to limit it a little bit because it's kind of getting ridiculous.
Yeah. I'm sure everybody went to Ramah.
But I'll go into the next question from a listener, and it's Sona... MKRTTCH. Do you know this person? No. Okay. Well, they asked, I feel that dating apps aren't showing me anyone I'm interested in. What can I do?
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing because obviously it's an algorithm, right? It's like you can only swipe on the people who you see. I think one thing is really just updating your profile. People rush through the process of making their profiles. They're like, okay, I finally downloaded the apps, ready to find my matches. And they just, you know, upload the last six photos on their phone and scribble down some bios. And then they join the app. And the thing is if people aren't drawn to your app or they don't like your pictures, it's going to affect kind of your ranking within the app. And so the first thing I would say to do is really invest more time into your profile, get better pictures, get, you know, if it's on Hinge, fill out prompts in a more interesting way. And so we were talking about, you know, the guy in the bar. Well, your profile is your opening line. Your profile is you putting yourself out there and then somebody responds to it. And so if you're not getting the types of conversations you want, change what's in your profile. And if you're not getting the kind of matches you want, change what's in your profile. Because as people interact with you in a different way, you're going to see a different type of match.
I was going to say, what is the ideal opening line?
I was going to say mine.
let's hear yours.
Yeah, let's hear yours.
Well, I think this was just money because it's not like creepy. It's nothing. Mm-hmm. I literally just would message a girl, what's your favorite number? And then they would respond, like some funny ones would reply 69. And then like other ones would just say like a random number that they like. And then I would say, oh, that's so weird. My favorite number is, and then I put my phone number and then I would put the ball in their court.
Oh, that's fun. I like that. That's very direct.
I might have to take that.
I think it's genius.
Yeah.
Not creepy. Gives my number. Gets to the point.
Did you ever watch the show? What was it called? The one that Aziz Ansari had. I think it was on Netflix. Or anyway, he would message girls and say, I'm going to Whole Foods. Can I get you anything?
I've done that too. That's a good one.
So funny. Well, I mean, Max, to answer your question, it's like there's the opening line, like once you match what you say. But I'm saying that the profile is the opening line. So I think like something that you could put on your profile is, you know, I put this in my book, my ideal plus one to a wedding, ... somebody who knows all the words to Wannabe by the Spice Girls. And then that is putting yourself out there as you like 90 music, you like the Spice Girls, you like karaoke, you like dancing. And then the person writes back and says, who's going to sing the Scary Spice verse? And now you're actually like having a friend conversation. You're not breaking the ice. You're not talking about these boring things like what did you study in college? How many siblings do you have? And so put yourself out there in a way that's specific and then somebody can respond to it. And then you don't have the same boring conversation over and over again. What did you do this weekend? Because you're talking about the Spice Girls.
That's so funny. We would click because me and my sister used to sing the so here's a story from A to Z.
You want to get that, with me? It's so good. Yes. Okay, so we could fight over who gets to sing the Scary Spice verse.
Oh, I didn't know that was what it was called, the Scary Spice. That's what.
Well, yeah, she's the one who does the rap part.
I don't really know the whole crew. I just know like that song.
Yeah. But, well,
I think I was.
You don't know now, you know.
Exactly. That is so funny though. Alana like basically broke down the whole Hinge thing for us and said if she sees a guy post a picture with a fish, she's just gonna delete her app.
Yeah, I mean the thing about profiles is that let's say you're a straight guy who is looking at straight women. You only see the profiles of other women. You don't actually realize what other guys are doing. And so you might have really cliche stuff, right? This is not as much, but remember there was this trend of people would go to Thailand and take a picture with like a super sedated tiger and everybody had like the sedated tiger photo, which, you know, in and of itself is a little problematic, but it also was cliche. Or everybody says they love The Office. Like at a certain point, when you say something that everybody else loves, it just becomes noise. If you say that you like music, so does everyone else. You love travel, so does everyone else. You have to be specific to spark conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like that's something that Hinge can do like pretty easily. Like I work at like multiple software startups. And can't they just put in something that where on a prompt, if you write in like The Office, they can be like this.
Be better.
This answer has been used a lot. You may want to rethink it.
It's a really good idea. Yeah. I mean, we definitely talk internally about using machine learning, right? Like when you upload a photo, it could say this is too blurry or you're wearing sunglasses. And so it's not something that specifically exists right now, but I think that's a great idea. There's a lot of ways to teach people how to be better at dating by saying, this is what other people who are successful do. This is what people who are less successful do. And you know, here's the choice that you should make. And so I think that is actually a really good feature idea.
I also want to get into the article that you sent me about your husband, Scott, which I really appreciated you know, kind of opening up with me, I guess, about your just whole history.
Sure.
Even though we were interviewing you, so I guess you kind of have to. But I'm very curious to hear about, is it called a radish?
Yeah, radish. Yeah, like the vegetable.
So So with other significant others, and I like pictured the movie Wanderlust with like Paul Rudd and Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, I haven't seen it, but I should see it. I mean, what is it about?
I mean, it's not very similar to what I read about in The Radish, but it's like Jennifer Aniston and Paul Rudd are dating. They're a hippie couple, and they like end up living with a bunch of hippies for a very long amount of time, and like it makes their relationship stronger. And basically, what the article is about.
So. Oh, I should watch it. Yeah, I love Paul Rudd. Yeah, I mean, basically, so this was an article I wrote in the New York Times earlier this year in the Modern Love section, and it's about how at the beginning of the pandemic last year, you know, when everyone's lives were imploding, I had a particularly hard time because my then fiance, now husband, was diagnosed with a rare form of bone cancer. And so as we were navigating this very crazy time, we were also going through medical decisions and a lot of hard questions. And so what ended up happening was that we got last minute married. We got married with 7 days notice in Golden Gate Park, you know, socially distanced with masks, et cetera. And as he was going through the treatment, it was just so isolating. I felt really depressed. I felt like it was hard to manage things on my own. And so what we ended up doing, which you just referenced, is we moved into this commune. And it's just not what I expected for myself, newly married in my 30s, but it was the right thing to do because there's this concept called OSOs, other significant others. And the idea is that in modern society, we expect our partners to give us everything, that they should be our passionate lover, our best friend, our co-parent, our, you know, work politics advisor, our exercise buddy. We want one person to be everything. And that's just not setting your relationship up for success. And instead, we should have these other significant others who we go to for distinct, discrete needs. And so moving into this commune with a bunch of people who I was already close friends with, it just took the pressure off the relationship. It made me feel way less isolated when my husband was in the hospital. And it really felt like turning the lights on because I had so much support, and it turned what was a very isolating year of the pandemic into actually a very social one. And so moving into Radish has just been the best way of managing a very challenging situation.
And are these things common? Because I've never heard of that in my life.
Yeah, I mean, I live in the Bay Area, and so it's certainly more common there. There's a network of what's known as intentional living communities. And so these are people who come together and they say, we're going to rent or buy a house. We're going to interview people to move in. We're going to be very conscientious about the type of people who live here, what our values are. You know, there's group meetings, and some houses share food. Some houses share cooking responsibilities. Some houses have, you know, mindfulness themes. So actually there are a bunch of them in the Bay Area. It's challenging to set them up, right? Because there's a lot of management that goes into it. How are we going to split the bill? How are we going to pay for insurance? And even the house I live in is owned by some of the couples who live there. And so even buying a property that big takes a lot of coordination. But I would say that since the article came out, I've had emails from tons of people around the country, people of all different ages, being like, I would love to live in this. I don't think that people should live alone in concrete boxes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I agree. I think it does get difficult. Like, you can't stick 15 people in a house in like a snowy area because they're what can they do outside the house? I feel like, you know,
unless you
snowboard and do winter sports. But I didn't, that thought came to me a little later. but I do want to also, obviously want to send our best wishes and love to your husband, Scott.
Thank you so much.
Very, very strong of you to write about that article and just open up with everybody. But I do want to dive back into the book also. I know you talk about your favorite chapter, at least from what I've heard, is Buck the Spark. And it's interesting because I feel like my relationship with my girlfriend is like the prime example of what you talked about.
Oh, yeah. I want to hear that.
The first time we hung out, we like thought each other were so weird, like did not vibe. It was just a weird feeling. But for some reason, we just kept hanging out. And then that spark kind of like grew over time. So I think what the whole thing is, right? Like if you don't feel a spark right away, it's not doomed. Like fuck that. You can get to know someone and then get it later.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole point of that chapter is to say we throw away a lot of great potential matches because we don't feel this instant pang of chemistry, and that's just a misconception. And so there's three myths of the spark that I bust in the book. The first one is what you're talking about with your girlfriend, that people think, oh, the spark can't grow over time. That's just absolutely not true. A lot of people the spark takes time, and it takes time to get to know someone. So I knew my husband for 8 years before we started dating, and we are in a great now 6 year long relationship. And then the second myth is, if you feel the spark, it must be a good thing. That's just not true. Sometimes the spark is somebody's really hot. They're really charismatic. They might be narcissistic. They give the spark to a lot of people. And so you're confusing what they give to a lot of people for a connection between the two of you. And that can actually lead people astray. And what also happens is that people confuse anxiety for chemistry. And so I think that I really like him, but actually what happens is I don't know how he feels about me. That gives me butterflies, and I'm pretending that those butterflies are a good thing.
Well, let me
ask,
let me just tell you,
last myth is, if you have a spark, then it must be a great relationship and be viable. And we also know that that's not true. A lot of now divorced couples, you know, started out with a really great how we met story and a really great spark, but that doesn't sustain you over time.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you. I wanted to give you the scenario of, if you do feel that spark right away, and let's say you're dating for like 5 years, and there is a phase where that spark goes away, like, are you doomed, or can you get it back?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and it's well phrased, because first of all, if you have a spark at the beginning, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I'm not saying that the spark is in and of itself bad. I'm saying the absence of it doesn't mean that you're not meant to be. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is that there is a phase at the beginning of a relationship of the honeymoon period. And if you look at the brain scans of people in love, falling in love, it actually lights up the same part of the brain, the nucleus accumbens, that lights up when people are, when a person who's addicted to drugs is taking that drug, right? And so love is literally a drug in the beginning. Over time, that fades, and the intensity of falling in love transitions into a more stable state of being in love. And so one of the mistakes I see people making, especially younger people, is thinking, we have moved into the next phase, this must be the wrong person, and leaving that person and jumping into the next thing. And they develop this pattern of always pursuing the falling in love. And that's just not the case. Long-term relationships go through different phases, from the honeymoon to a more companionate stage. And so even if the initial spark has transitioned into something else, it doesn't mean you're doomed. It means that you're experiencing the natural ebbs and flows of a long-term relationship.
Well, that was a very good breakdown. I do want to get into a segment that we do called the Matzo Ball Minutes. It's like a quick hitter kind of vibe.
Sure.
So first one, do opposites really attract, or is that bullshit?
Yes, I think opposites can definitely attract. If you are too similar to a partner, then what makes it interesting? And so, you know, sometimes opposites attract, sometimes birds of a feather flock together. But if you and your partner are different, that is absolutely not a deal breaker. That's going to make things interesting, and they're going to balance you out.
Next question. Do you make your bed every morning?
I usually don't make my bed every morning, but I am staying in an Airbnb right now, and my husband has asked me to make the bed. And so before we go to bed at night, I make the bed.
Max, do you make your bed every morning? Do you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, he's showing me the bed.
Yeah, I make it every morning.
Nice flex, Max.
Well, yeah, because people shit on me that I never made my bed, that I'm like, it's just a great way to start your day, which I get. I get why people do it. I don't like to undo my bed every time I get in. I just want to like jump in.
Are you into the tuck?
Oh, wait, my God. Don't get me into this tuck or no.
Oh, my
tuck,
God. The tuck. You don't know about the tuck?
I hate
it.
Oh, what's that?
Max, illuminate this guy.
The tuck or the no tuck? It's a Seinfeld episode with Costanza. He wants it so that there's no tuck when he's at the hotel, and he's going back and forth with Jerry. Jerry wants the tuck.
Jerry wants the tuck.
We've debated this before on the podcast, right?
We have.
I didn't know it was a Seinfeld thing, though. I thought that was just like your own personal preference.
See, Pete, this is what people should be talking about on the first date. Are you a tuck or no tuck?
That's actually on my Hinge profile.
Are you serious? No way. What does it say? What's the prompt that you answer?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Max. What a funny coincidence. Hashtag small world. Hashtag geography.
It is, I flip out over hotels that tuck the blankets and sheets.
That's really good. You're going to find some good Seinfeld fans with that.
Yeah. Well, now that I know it's Seinfeld, I also do agree. I've never really watched Seinfeld, so I guess I have to start it. Well, I guess that goes into the next question. What is your favorite romantic comedy movie?
Ooh, you know, I do hate on rom-coms in my book, but over COVID, just I've found myself very drawn to watching rom-coms. They're just really relaxing and everything works out at the end. I would have to say I really like Hitch. I love the dating coach who needs to take his own advice, and Will Smith is so good in that movie.
It's funny. We talked about Hitch with Alana, and we talked about what a modern day Hitch would look like, which would be him logging into 100 different Hinge profiles and talking to girls.
It's
talking
true.
To the partner yeah. for the client. And this brings us to the last question of the Motzball Minute. And this, I'm actually so curious because I've never really talked about this with a professional dating dating scientist. Do you think married couples would be happier if they slept in separate beds but in the same room?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, I don't think the issue is separate beds, same room, because I feel like some of the issues are things like temperature, fan or no fan, if somebody snores. And so maybe reframing the question is, would couples be happier sleeping in separate rooms? I don't know, man. Sleep is pretty important. And the older you get, the harder it is to sleep. And so what I would say is let's destigmatize the fact that maybe people don't want to sleep in the same room, but they can still cuddle in the morning and at night. But, you know, sometimes people just want to sleep in separate rooms. I think that's okay.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I was in Florida with my girlfriend for a week, and we had two beds in the same room, and it was like the best week ever because I usually sleep like shit when we sleep together.
Oh.
I slept good for a week because I had my own bed.
There you go. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of ways to hack that. Like, is it, does she steal the blanket? Well, then you can each have your own blanket. Do you like it to be cooler? Then you can have a fan blowing you. I mean, honestly, you'd be surprised how many couples talk to me about sleep. I think it is a problem to be solved.
Well, because if you just don't sleep well, you wake up in the morning automatically in a shit mood.
Yeah. How can you be a good partner if you didn't get a good night's sleep?
Exactly. These are the problems that we deal with.
This is why the Matzo Ball Minute matters.
100%. But now we are actually into the boomerang part.
Okay. What do I do? What do I do?
So we ask this to every single guest.
Mm-hmm.
If you can go back and talk to the 15-year-old version of yourself,
yeah.
what kind of advice would you give her?
I think I would say to her, follow your instincts, follow your passions. You're cool. You know, you don't have to prove to anyone else that you're cool and find your people.
It's so funny because we ask every single guest the same exact question and everyone has a different answer.
What are some of the more common ones?
I mean, it mostly just be yourself, which is like very common,
yeah.
but that's like kind of, I mean, everyone we've talked to is successful, so it all ends up working out for them. So
yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the point. It's like even the trials and tribulations I've gone through since being 15, I'm grateful for because I like where I am now. Yeah. And so it feels like it was the path that I had to take to get here.
Exactly. So maybe we'll just have someone who's just a total piece of shit on here and we'll ask them what their advice would be. I'm going to cut that part out.
No, I like that. I think that's funny. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it didn't get the reaction.
No. I like it. I like it.
Okay.
I think it's hard with when it's audio because I'm like smiling, but I'm not like, oh, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. Everyone knows now that Logan laughed at that.
So. I did laugh. There was a laugh. Hilarious. So
final question for you. What does the Jewish community, like how it's impacted you, mean to you now?
Yeah, I mean, I feel very connected to the people that I went to Jewish day school with. So I went to Donna Klein Jewish Academy from kindergarten through eighth grade.
Oh, wow.
And I have a huge, tight group of friends from that time. My OG friend, Danny Helitzer, I'm her children's godparent, godmother. And yeah, I mean, I just think being in an environment that felt safe and supportive and where I could be nerdy and read books and learn a lot was huge. And then since then, I've made a lot of great friends doing different things. In college, I was part of a group called Friday Night Lights, where we would throw Shabbat dinners at Hillel. And I made one of my closest friends, Toby Stein, that way. I went to ROI a few years ago. Do you know what that is? Through the Schusterman organization. There's this great thing called the Charles and Lynn Schusterman organization. They sent people to Israel for this really cool trip called Reality. And they have this, it didn't happen last year, but an annual conference of Jewish people from around the world. And they bring them to Israel and to Jerusalem for a week. And I just had the best time. And I made a bunch of friends through that. And so I consistently feel like the Jewish community inserts a lot of great people into my life. And there's definitely a feeling of, oh, I've known you because we're so connected through these traditions.
Well, now we feel that way about you also. You're a part of our family now.
Yay. Well, it was fun spending a pre-Shabbat with you.
We want to thank you so much for coming on. Yeah. I mean, hopefully we can keep in touch. I'm definitely gonna need some advice down the road.
Yeah, yeah. I want to hear what the 24-year-old dating community is like. Yeah, it was really fun meeting both of you.
And I'll tune into your Clubhouse rooms.
Oh, yeah, that sounds great.
And it's great meeting someone who's a big Seinfeld fan.
Yeah, all right. 1, 2, 3, no tuck.
No tuck.
Are we
no
just like here?
Why not?
I don't know. But yeah, thank you again so much.
Okay, yeah, it was really fun. All right, great to meet you. Bye.
Meet you, bye.
We want to thank Logan Urie for coming on and talking to us and giving us a lot of good advice. She actually ended up staying on the Zoom with me for like 5 minutes after we finished just to like give me personal advice, which I really appreciated. So if anyone actually is looking for dating advice, Logan's a great person to talk to. She's super responsive. I recommend DMing her. And Cappy, I know you were traveling, but how funny is it that she was at the same temple that you grew up and were bar mitzvahed at?
Oh my God. Yeah, it was like right away, right as I was listening back to the interview, I was like, you're shitting me. She's bar mitzvahed at, or she was bar mitzvahed there, right?
Well, bot mitzvah. You still can't figure that out? I know, 63 right? episodes in?
Honestly, right? I'm out of it, though. Got a little stomach bug. But no, it was so crazy that she was bot mitzvah there. I mean, literally the first part of the intro, like Temple Beth, I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? But I wish I was on the interview to see if we had any like mutual friends or anything like that. Ask her if she knows Mrs. Ruth and Mr. R. Those are like two OGs back in the Temple Beth Om days.
It would have been payback for all the sleepaway camp talk that we do. You would have just been talking about Temple right? for 20 minutes.
It actually would have been bad, but speaking of Temple Beth Om, I don't know if she's been back there lately, which I need to get my ass back there. I need to get myself to like a Friday night service, something like that. I keep saying this multiple times, but
never happening.
Like, I know, right? Like the whole temple into like a school for kids now. There's still the temple there, but they like extended the building and now it's a pretty like big school for like children. I'm assuming it's Jewish children only. Sorry. No, but
I would assume so also.
Yeah, I feel a little bad for Logan, though. She trapped you in here, or you trapped her in here for that 5 minutes after. You're probably asking about your porn history or something like that.
I told her I didn't want to ask in the recording because it was like a personal thing that I needed advice on. But yeah, I kind of trapped her, but she ended up getting out of it and say she had to leave. But I know she's got some stuff going on, but I want to thank her again for doing that. That was really nice of her. And definitely going to keep in touch with her. She's awesome.
No, for sure. She sounded awesome. Interview sounded awesome, too.
I do want to take a second to talk about one of our favorite sponsors, Mindset Wellness CBD. They're a brand new full spectrum CBD company infused with terpenes and vitamins that can provide all natural anxiety relief. They have several different mindsets, including happy, calm, focus, health, beauty, and rest, which are meant to be taken together to customize your mindset. So go to mindsetwellnesscbd.com and use our code LOCKA10 for 10% off and free shipping. And feel free to check them out on Instagram at mindset wellness CBD. We love them. Literally cannot say enough good things about them. I don't know if you guys saw me on Ellie's Instagram Live the other day with them.
What a hell of an intro that they gave you, huh?
Yeah, I know. That was really kind of them. Entrepreneur, CEO.
I know, right? CEO, ex-former UMass Amherst star.
I don't know if they know that I'm doing this out of my mom's room, so we'll see.
No, that was great, though. They're amazing.
They are great. We love them. And I think that wraps it up for this episode. But happy March Madness weekend. We are hyped. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Talk to you guys next week. I need space now. I need you to slow down. It's not a race now. I can't really hear what you gotta say now. Shut up. Start dancing, ho.